final case for today. This is the appeal number 023498, United States of America versus Renneth Leifer.
May it please the court. My name is Tracy Leroy, and I represent the appellant, Edward Renneth-Lacius. This court should vacate Mr. Renneth-Lacius' sentence and remand to the district court for resentencing because the district court erred in applying two upward enhancements under the sentencing guidelines. First, the district court erred in finding that INS Examiner Robinson was a high-level decision-making official under the sentencing guidelines. And the district court also erred in finding that Mr. Renneth-Lacius was a leader or organizer of criminal activity involving five or more participants. Going first to the high-level decision-making official issue, INS Examiner Robinson is not a high-level decision-making official as shown by, first, the actual job duties of an INS examiner, second, by the plain language of the guideline itself and the application note to it, and third, by case law around the circuits which discusses what appropriately is a high-level decision-making official under this guideline. An INS examiner ranges from a GS-5 level to a GS-12. According to testimony at the sentencing hearing in this case, INS Examiner Robinson would deal with literally thousands of green card applications every year. An INS examiner is the first level of review when an applicant comes in to seek permanent legal residency. The INS examiner is the person who interviews that applicant, checks to make sure that they meet the proper...
Well, the government says that there really isn't any effective review of this. Whatever this person concludes is the final decision. So there isn't anybody higher in the chain. How do you...
Your Honor,
you don't really dispute that, do you?
Your Honor, we do dispute whether or not there is anyone higher in the chain.
Well, yeah, there's somebody that could. But as a practical matter, with all these multiple requests for these green card things, whatever they say, this examiner says, becomes the decision, doesn't it?
As a practical matter, the decision by the
isn't just a question of whether somebody appeals, isn't it? I mean, this decision is reviewable. Of course, the point is that it isn't often reviewed.
Your Honor, approvals are very rarely reviewed, according to the testimony on the
record. Yes, nobody appeals an approval. Right?
But, Your Honor, the supervisor does have the authority to review that. She said it's
yes,
a practical
that's the point
matter.
I'm making, I think. But.
Right. As a practical matter, there is very little review of approvals in this process unless it's brought to the supervisor's attention. Denials are reviewed by the supervisor examiner as well as ultimately by an immigration judge that comes to that. However...
Well, if you knew you had crooked immigration judges... Or officials granting these kind of things, maybe there would be more reviews of approval.
Your Honor, the testimony in the record indicates that if a problem is brought to the attention of the supervisor, if there's a suspicion of fraud, then they would review approval. But that the practical nature of the job with so many thousands of applicants flowing through leads that to be pretty much impossible in this city.
Well, but then that's why there's a lot of authority invested in this officer. I mean, because there are thousands of applications, this is really the end for many of these people, or else he passes on it and then they move forward. Isn't it a quasi-judicial position?
Your Honor, I don't know if we would agree that it's quasi-judicial. His job is to take predetermined guidelines determined by policy-making officials above him in the INS and in the government, and apply those to the facts before him. He does have some discretion, but that should not rise to the level of a high-level decision-making official under this guideline. This is an 8-level enhancement. It's been applied to people such as the Secretary of Agriculture, the Chief of District 8 Housing for the District of Columbia. This is an INS examiner who is the first level of intake for green card applicants. He is the guy on the street that they go to and say, here's my paperwork, does it fit all the criteria? He looks at a processing sheet and ticks off whether or not the applicant meets the requirements. He does not have the final decision, although he does have some discretion.
And under this provision of the guidelines, the eight-level enhancement is mandatory?
Yes,
if he falls into that category.
It's my opinion.
The court doesn't have discretion within that.
Your Honor, it provides for an eight-level enhancement.
There's an alternative 5 level, I gather, in the guidelines, isn't that right?
The alternative 5 level would have been applied if this had not, if this 8 level enhancement had not been used. They would have used a prior issue of the guidelines, and the 5 level would have gone for the number of bribes or the amount involved, not for high level official.
So they would have gotten 5 levels
anyway.
Potentially, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if the judge had chosen to apply that.
So we're talking about, I think, 3 levels then, difference. If the judge applied the bribe and the amount of the bribe, there would, I mean, there's 3 levels, right? 3 levels difference between
yes,
5 and 8.
This circuit has not yet applied this particular guideline or addressed this particular guideline, but it has been widely discussed across the other circuits. Those circuits have collectively looked at 4 factors to determine whether a particular official falls within this guideline. Those 4 factors are, first, possession of supervisory authority. In this case, it is undisputed that INS Examiner Robinson does not supervise any other government employees. The second factor is the existence of discretion involving final decision-making authority over matters of public policy or over the expenditure of sums of substantial sums of money. As we were discussing earlier, INS Examiner Robinson did have some discretion and he could make decisions, but that doesn't separate him from a multitude of federal employees who are the first level of intake for applications, whether it be for INS green cards, Medicare, anything of that nature. He did not make these guidelines. He did not choose the requirements. He did not pick which ones to apply. He simply took what he was given from his superiors at the INS and checked to make sure the forms were in order. The third factor is the ability to use the position to influence another in the exercise of policymaking discretion. It is also undisputed here that INS Examiner Robinson does not fall into this category, which has been traditionally used to apply to people such as a top aide to a U.S. senator or someone who steps in the shoes of an actual policymaking official. The final factor is the role of the position.
Like a law clerk or one of the judges.
Potentially like a law clerk, Your Honor. The final factor is the role of the position in the applicable government system as a whole. An INS examiner is not the lowest person in the entirety of the federal government, but neither does he rise to the level appropriate for this enhancement. The government put forth in their brief the argument that an INS examiner is properly analogous to a juror. We disagree. We don't believe that an INS examiner possesses the same level of inherent important responsibility that jurors, judges, prosecuting attorneys, elected officials, and those listed in the guidelines do. An INS examiner simply is not at the right level to apply this enhancement. Maybe one step up might have been, but in this case, on this record, an INS examiner has no discretion to go beyond what he is told to do, whether or not he's processing the requirements correctly. The second sentencing application in which the district court erred in applying concerns four-level organizer-leader enhancement. Mr. Renoslasius was not an organizer or leader of a criminal activity that involved 5 or more participants. First of all, there were not 5 criminally responsible participants involved in the criminal activity. And second, even if there were, Mr. Renoslasius' activities in no way rise the level of extensive activity or any sort of leader or organizer. At the sentencing hearing, the government put forth 11 allegedly criminally responsible participants. In its brief, the government drew back and reduced this number to 5. Those 5 are not just demonstrably criminally responsible. Mr. Renoslasius did not contest Natalia Pavlikova, who is the person who came in and actually paid money to get permanent legal residency, and there is also himself involved. The 3 other people put forth by the government did not rise to the level of criminal responsibility. First, the government puts forth a person who allegedly offered $25,000 to Mr. Renoslasius in order to bribe INS Examiner Robinson for permanent legal residency. This came about when Mr. Renoslasius went to visit INS Examiner Robinson at his office. Your Honor, I see that I'm into my rebuttal time. I'd like to reserve the remaining time. Thank you.
May it please the Court. John Pabriska for the United States. Your Honors, we're asking that the Court review the decisions of Judge Holdeman. First of all, with respect to the 8-point enhancement, or with due deference with respect to his application of the guidelines to the facts that he found. And in doing so, we would ask then that the court look at this in terms of whether there was an identifiable mistake that the court made in its evaluation, and we submit that there was not. When he imposed the 8-point enhancement, Judge Holdeman made findings with respect to the position that Clarence Robinson held, that he was an adjudicator. Counsel repeatedly refers to him as an INS examiner. First of all, that, of course, isn't the title. He's a district adjudications officer. And under the decision by the Fourth Circuit in Gary, one of the first things that they found in that case was that as an adjudicator, he was, under Application Note 1, in a similar position to the person listed there, such as judges, prosecutors.
Isn't one of the people that's listed there the supervisory police officer?
There's a supervisory police officer that's listed there as well.
The implication of that would be that a non-supervisory police officer wouldn't count. Does that make that seem reasonable?
Well, that's
my question is, how does the decisions that this person makes, are they any more weighty than those that are made by a police officer? He decides to arrest somebody or not arrest them.
Well, they are, because the decisions that he's making here, he's making as a judge, as an adjudicator. He has direct authorization from the Attorney General to gather facts, to gather evidence, and to make decisions about who is and who is not going to be granted.
I'm not sure that's any different than what a police officer does.
Well,
he may not be formally an adjudicator and so on, but he's making decisions.
The question, I think, would be, Your Honor, what decisions is that police officer making? We've analogized the situation here, Mr. Robinson's position as a district adjudications officer, to the Fifth Circuit's decision in Snell that dealt with a juror, because that juror was making some of the same arguments that the defense is making here, that they were not making high policy decisions, they were not a high-ranking decision-making official. But what the court noted there was the importance of that person to the process in which they were involved. And there, of course, it's the judicial process. Here, it's the immigration process of the United States. Gary also found that the district administrative adjudicator in that case was in a sensitive position as well as being an adjudicator. And Robinson was. They found that the sensitivity developed from the fact that there was access to law enforcement data and sensitive information from the State Department. But the sensitive position...
The brief doesn't make much out of that sensitive aspect, however. I was interested in that, but it seems to be focused on other matters than sensitivity.
Well, but Your Honor, the sensitivity is not just the access to those kinds of internal law enforcement documents. The sensitivity is to the process itself. Just as that juror in Snell is in a sensitive position because they have the ability to disrupt the process by withholding a vote of guilty. They can disrupt the process. They may even be able to influence the panel to reach a verdict of not guilty. Similarly here, the entire process here of people who are seeking to come into the United States rests on these district adjudications officers to conduct those proceedings fairly and honestly. There are millions of people that want to come to this country, and this is their exposure to the systems of this country, the immigration system. Is it fair? Is it being conducted properly? And it all comes down to this man and the decisions he makes. And that's the sensitivity of the position.
Some high level, though. That's a...
Well, the defense repeatedly talks about a high-level decision-making official. They beat that phrase 10 times in their reply brief, and they said it here again this morning. But that, of course, would weed out of the guideline the phrase, or sensitive position. Because that guideline doesn't say just high-ranking public officials making high-level decisions. It says, or in a sensitive position. And we submit that that was analyzed both by the court in Gary, by the court in Snell, and that it isn't addressed by the defense here. And it is a key element of, Your Honor, for instance, the difference between the day-to-day decisions of a police officer on the street and these district adjudications officers. 1,100 times a year, according to the testimony of Marilyn Rorath at the sentencing hearing, 1,100 times a year this man's making a decision. 1,100 people are going to be coming into this country.
one in 100 or perhaps no more than one in 1,000 of those is going to be looked at by anybody else. In the reply brief, there's repeated use of terms like initial decision or preliminary decision being made by this adjudications officer. Those phrases suggest that somebody is going to take this decision as soon as he makes it and look at it all over again. And of course, the testimony at the sentencing hearing was very clear on that matter. That's not happening. And it's not the decision that he denies permanent legal resident status. That, there's an elaborate system of review for that. It's the decision when he says, you're in. And that's the one where the bribes are going to be. Nobody's going to pay him a bribe to refuse their request for permanent legal residency status. It's when he's granting it that nobody's going to be looking over his shoulder to see whether he did it properly.
He has subpoena power, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
How many district adjudicatory officers are there in INS? Do you have any sense of that?
I do not know.
Looking at the structure of...
I do not know.
There was that this other issue in the case?
Yes, with respect to the enhancement, the four-point enhancement, Your Honors, for being a leader or organizer. With respect to that...
Well, the problem here, it seems to me, is in an ordinary case, these other people are co-conspirators or they're associates in the commission of the crime. Here, the other people are, seem to me, in effect, customers of this fellow who's out promoting his own services or somebody else's. I mean, isn't this somewhat analogous to in the case of a drug dealer counting the customers of the drug dealer as coming under this guideline?
It is not, Your Honor, because this is not the middleman that the defense tries to portray him. The crime is his. It is not. We're not dealing with a drug dealer here at that office. We were dealing with people who were in an undercover operation. There is not the bribery offense here. Is not the receipt of bribes by Robinson. So the crime
is out selling their services or selling his services, illegal services, to these people who are coming in who are potential malefactors.
He's recruiting people to come in and to pay illegally to obtain permanent legal residency status.
But can we count everybody whom the defendant proposed, you know, this kind of transaction to? I mean, in other words, what evidence is there in the record about whether the ones solicited were actually involved, even innocently? I mean, can we tell the three people listed on the facts agreed to his proposals, or were just people that have been targeted because he got the names? I mean, should those people really be counted?
Well, first of all, in order to come up with the five, we don't need to look at the people on the facts. The first thing that needs to be done is to deal with, for instance, the reference to exploratory discussions that were being carried out by the people who actually came to that storefront office. We've attached a picture of that storefront office. It's page 7 of the appendix for the government's brief. Nobody goes into that place and understands that that's anything but an illegal operation with the kind of money that they're being told they have to pay. The people who actually showed up, Premick, the man who's there to get got two illegal aliens that he's brokering for. The additional people who come in, Ms. Pavlikova, who's count 2 of the indictment. There's also the lady that comes in to make a preliminary discussion about and is not dealt with further. But there's also
that
Angel.
Well, that's that Angel.
Well, no, that would be Corazon, Your Honor. Angel comes in on behalf of himself and his wife, and only backs away, knowing full well what the amount of the bribe is going to be, backs away because he can't get a marriage discount for the two of them, that it's going to be $10,000 for the two. So if you've got Angel, you've got Premick with the two people that he's bringing in, you've got Ms. Pavlikova, you have Mr. Renis Lassus himself, that leaves the person that's paying the $25,000 to obtain permanent legal residency status. The reply brief says, well, that might just be a circumstance of puffing by Mr. Renis Lassus to curry favor with Mr. Robinson. Well, that's not what the jury found, because that's one of the counts on which they convicted him of offering bribe. They could have dealt with that issue themselves if they thought that was mere puffing. He would have been acquitted. It was not. They accepted those facts, and they made the factual finding that he was making a legitimate offer on behalf of somebody else. And that somebody else who's offering $25,000, you're offering $25,000 for what you can get next door for $220, you know it's a crime. There's the five. Now, the rest of those people, they may well not have known that what was involved here was illegal, but they don't have to. under this court's decision in time. The issue then becomes whether this is otherwise expensive activity. If there are more than five participants, well, if there's Mr. Renacuasas and one criminally culpable participant, then it's a question of whether there are more than five total additional people, or whether the circumstances are circumstances of the crime are otherwise expensive, and in this case they were. It went on for a year and a half with the activity that was going on. Your Honor, you would ask that the conviction and sentence be affirmed. Thank you very much.
You had 1 minute, Ms. Leroy.
Thank you. Your Honor, I'd like to return to...
Leroy or Leroy?
Leroy.
I ask that because I'm from Wisconsin. So we have an all-pro defensive back for the Green Bay Packers named Leroy Butler, but after he made all-pro, he became Leroy Butler.
I try to class it up a little. I'd like to return to the leader-organizer enhancement. The government now has reneged again on the five people which it claims that, which it in its brief said were criminally responsible, and tried to add in someone which it originally said, or in its brief said, was an unknowing outsider, Eugenia Corzine. If the court looks at the transcript from Corzine and the unidentified male who accompanied her, a transcript which was not shown to the jury but which the judge may have considered in sentencing, it becomes clear that she had a pending legitimate application and that INS examiner Robinson simply agreed to check on it for her. The government takes issue with the description of the visits of two people to GS Golden Travel, the travel agency, as exploratory discussions. If the court looks at those transcripts, what they will see are potential criminally responsible people, not criminally responsible people. Your Honor, I see my time is up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This case will be taken under advisement.